special Valentine's Day episode of Highly Suspect Reviews.
With all of the romance. All of it.
All of the love.
Jammed right up your love hole.
Jammed so far up there that you can taste your own bile.
It tastes like chalky, tasteless candy hearts.
Which is good, because that's what we tasted.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know what? If we suffered, you need to suffer.
Yeah. Well, we tasted that and a lot of our own blood.
Yeah. There was a little bit of blood.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of blood. Some spotting.
I think I chewed one of my own teeth off.
But you know what? The surprise is they weren't all as terrible as we might have thought.
It turned into its own sort of game, like Valentine's Day, rom-drom, Russian roulette, because all of these films are being released this week. And all of them screamed for all intents and purposes on the same night. So some of us went to one, some of us went to the other. That's why the unusual suspects are very scattered on these reviews, and why we're kind of doing them all as one series.
So we're just going to put all these things together and take a look at what might be going on with your Valentine's Day.
Maybe you saw this movie.
About last night, the latest movie from Kevin Hart. 2 weeks goes by, and Kevin Hart has a new movie out. It's either a concert film or it's another comedy.
Well, he's going to make it. I mean, one way or the other, I'm going
to
make it.
Well, yeah, if he has to drag Hollywood with him, it's going to happen for him.
Well, it's kind of like he's made it, but he hasn't realized it yet, so he's still working his ass off. But it's like, dude, you can slow down now.
I don't know. They said that to Chris Tucker. Look what happened to him.
Yeah, well, he just kind of burned out and went off on
yeah,
his own.
He totally challenged it.
It's like
challengered.
Well, I feel like maybe, Kevin Hart is looking at, okay, I've seen what Martin Lawrence did.
Yeah.
I've seen what Chris Tucker did. I've learned some things. I kind of know what to do here. I got this.
It's like you can either go Martin Lawrence, Chris Tucker, or you can go Jamie Foxx. He's like, or you can just go like Chris Rock and be right in the middle and just sort of make mediocre movies the rest of your life.
Ah, well, not settling on that. His latest movie in the last 2 weeks is About Last Night. And it's a remake of the 1986 movie that starred Rob Lowe and Demi Moore. Although this time, those two beautiful people are played by two beautiful darker people, namely Michael Ealy and, God, what's my next ex-wife's name? Joy Bryant. Thank you.
Ooh, Jesus Christ.
And in the original, it was Jim Belushi and I think Elizabeth Perkins who were the best friends.
Yeah. Jim Belushi was all, yeah. And, oh God, who plays him in here though?
Kevin Hart plays him in here.
Okay. See, that's better than Jim Belushi.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope for Jim. For Kevin Hart's sake, that 10 years from now, people aren't looking at him in the way we were looking at Jim Belushi 10 years after the original About Last Night.
Of course, I mean, that's not really aiming that high.
No, the bar has been set low.
It's like a basketball team saying, well, I hope I'm better than the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, okay, so seeing the trailers for this movie, A, there hasn't been that big of a trailer push for it.
Like, not at all.
I just barely caught one. A screening just snuck in at the last minute. And to realize, oh, it's a remake of that 1986 romantic comedy that was, I can barely remember. All right, whatever. And now they're doing the thing they did with the honeymoon. It's like, oh, but it's going to be an all-black cast this time. How could this be possibly any good? Especially when the trailers didn't show anything funny.
Well, maybe because it's directed by Steve Pink.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about Kevin Hart is, unlike the comedian, unlike a Martin Lawrence, who will just get in there and just act like an idiot until people laugh or tell him to stop. Kevin Hart actually is a little bit more controlled or is able to come up with better material constantly.
Well, he fits his material within the story. It's not like they stopped the movie for him.
Right, right.
It's like his character was expressive, so it worked.
Yeah. Now, for anybody who didn't see the original 1986 movie.
I saw it. I just couldn't tell you what it's about now.
Or didn't read the original David Mamet play, Sexual Perversity in Chicago. This is basically the story of, it's kind of like a bromantic comedy, once again.
Yes.
That focuses on two friends. One, a young, good-looking guy, and the other, well, his asshole buddy.
A munchkin in a suit.
Yes. We swap out Jim Belushi for Kevin Hart.
Is this Chasing Amy?
No. But he's a crude dude with a rude attitude who's all about sex. And the thing
the homophones.
One of the things that works here is that Kevin Hart, like, most of the time, he's shot of a cannon. He's running about his mouth constantly. And if you get him in something like, what was the recent movie that he
did? Along?
Ride Along. Where the script is weak, it just becomes tiring. And you feel tired for him. It's like, well, he's trying, it's just not enough here. Here, this time, when you have a good script, he's actually pretty funny all the time. But unlike Martin Lawrence, who becomes the whole show, he's really working with an ensemble. And Regina Hall plays his love interest. I can't remember the name of any of the characters.
Joan.
But man, if you think nobody can keep up with him, she does a great job.
She really does.
I mean, the two of them are just toe-to-toe and being loudmouths, sex addicts for each other. They are the worst couple that you want to know because they yell and scream and cuss each other out all the time and fight. But when they have sex, it's all over the place and kind of in your face.
Well, both of them have a long history working in comedy and even ensemble right. comedy. For instance, she was in all the Scary Movies yes. for whatever that's worth. But she's worked with ensemble groups before. So it's not surprising that they put these two together and let's see what happens.
Well, it does seem like they went to somebody looked at Think Like a Man and said, okay, who from this cast can I pull in? Because I want to make another romantic comedy and make it a good one, or at least fun and enjoyable. And yeah, it has the trappings of the basic romantic comedies. It doesn't stray too far from the original story, but they just pack it full of jokes constantly. Some of them are crude, and right at times when I thought, all right, it's starting to hit that fart joke territory, it would pull back. And not to put all the credit on Regina Hall and Kevin Hart, but Michael Ealy and Joy Bryant, they actually are a couple of people that, hey, you know what? I kind of like them. Like, it was never like, oh, get them off screen. But I mean, what they had together, like, everybody's chemistry worked so well that when there's problems, you kind of feel like, oh, man.
Plus, you just kept waiting for Michael Ealy to turn on full robot.
Right. Now, this is how I felt. I actually, like, thought I was taking a bullet and came out loving the film. But maybe everybody didn't feel that way.
Yeah, I agree with your idea, your conception of the characters. I agree that Kevin Hart and Regina Hall really did a great job. Michael Ealy and Joy Bryant were great, but my problem with the movie is that it just sort of it missed an emotional center. And I know that seems stupid for a comedy like this, that's just a mile a minute jokes, but
you wanted to cry.
They went for that a few times, but because they hadn't invested in it, I hadn't invested in it. Like, there was a few scenes where they were trying to go for, well, you know, it's nobody's fault. This is sometimes just happens. But I was so busy laughing that they didn't invest any time in building the drama, so that but when they came to it, I just couldn't care.
Well, would you say that has more to do with your expectations, though?
No, I had no expectations walking in.
Yeah,
none.
I know he had no expectations. But
you were interested in the drama as well as the comedy, and you felt like the drama was just an afterthought at all.
Yeah, it seemed like an afterthought. But I the thing I do like that they did is that they didn't fall back on a cliche like in romantic comedies where one person's hiding a secret. And then that's going to get them together. There was a little bit of that, but there was a point in the movie where I don't want to ruin it, but there was a big event that happens. And instead of, you know, the guy keeping the secret, he just told her.
Yeah.
Just right away.
That was one of the things I liked about it. Like, yeah, so often when something like that comes up, you go like, okay, here's we get into French farce territory. Yeah. People running in and out of doors.
There's Jack Tripper.
I know.
It's like, so many times we'll be watching these movies sitting together and we both kind of look at each other and groan at that point. We're like, oh, for God's sakes, just tell them.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, when the couple are having troubles and not able to get it together, it's not like they're doing things that are stupid. It's just like,
it's regular couple stuff.
Yeah. It's real couple stuff. Like, you know, one person is really in their head and the other one's not, and they can't quite make it work.
And they're both, neither one of them is a bad person. One of the characters has a bad run of luck and they just can't get out of their own head. And so that just causes things to go the way it goes.
So who are the couples? It's Kevin Hart, Regina Hall, Michael Ealy, and Joy Bryant.
Yeah.
But is Paula Patton involved with someone in the movie?
Yes.
I can't believe you didn't mention Paula Patton by now.
Well, it's not quite a spoiler, but she's like the ex-girlfriend. The infamous ex-girlfriend who broke his heart before.
For Kevin Hart or Michael
Ealy? For Michael Ealy.
Kevin Hart.
Give me a break.
Yeah. Come on.
Fair enough.
He'd have to use a grapple hook.
Ealy's a good-looking guy. Yeah. I get that. Okay. Kevin Hart is... You know what? Funny goes a long way. I'm just saying.
It don't go that far.
Yes.
No, it don't go that far. I've hooked stuff way out of my league before.
Sure.
But not Paula Patton way out of my league.
Like, he'd be in the process of trying to make it work, and his body would reject it.
No. It would just be like two magnets opposing forces.
Yeah, at some point, she'd pass by a mirror and go, oh my God, what am I doing?
I got to call Robin Thicke.
And her role is, like, her character plays a big part, but her actual role is small in it.
Yeah.
But another thing is that this movie is meta because they watch the original about last night on TV at one
point. So it doesn't occur to anybody that this is exactly what they're going through?
No.
Okay. That's weird.
I mean, it's just a quick scene. It's almost like a wink and a nod to go like, hey, we know. We know.
So there's no appearance by, like, Rob Lowe or anybody like that at any point? No,
except for when they appear on television in that one scene.
See, that would have been funny. But it looks like there are no white people in this at all, which I find offensive.
Actually, Christopher McDonald's in it.
Yeah, and I tell you what I really like.
Oh, and Joe Latrulio shows up. That's pretty much his same character from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Is there anything Joe Latrulio does not show up in right now?
Well, I tell you what I really liked is too often when you see these black comedies, and not black comedy, but just a comedy featuring a bunch of black actors, it's just like, oh, this is a separate alternate universe where there are only black people in America. Right. Which, you know, cool. But
hey, we can dream. You guys got Narnia.
It's like, we can have Atlanta. We lost New Orleans. We can have Atlanta. But what happens is instead of just saying, okay, this is only black people, it's like they reverse it to where instead of you have the black friend, you have the white friend. And like, he's the only black guy with
mystical,
three white friends.
Magical Caucasian?
Yeah. That's sort of what it is.
Yeah, it kind
of
is. Yeah, any other movie, there'd be that old black bar owner who was a friend of your dead
friend
father's,
of your dad's
who would break down and give you the knowledge that you needed to go forward.
So there was, like, some old white guy blind sitting on a corner playing a banjo. It's like, well, son, I can see what your problem is from here.
There sort of was. I forgot the guy's
name. Don't you know that woman
loves Christopher McDonald.
You.
Christopher McDonald, yeah, because he tells him at one point, he's like, you know, when you had a girlfriend, you weren't that nice to know. Because he was sort of turning into a dick because he had that confidence back. And the entire time he's keeping him focused on, okay, well, make sure that you're keeping her happy and things are going okay. And, you know, don't turn into a different person, because one of the contrivances of the plot is that Michael Ealy's character runs a restaurant supply business that's supplying his bar, and the guy can't make his rent, and it's a whole thing. And so he's trying to, like, know where you came from. You know, you used to come here all the time. Your dad and I opened this bar, and it's a whole thing.
this movie,
like, Chris McDonald is giving him this speech?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Wow, you're right. This is like a mirror universe.
It's like Will Smith showed up. He's like, I'm in the wrong movie.
Well, the thing that makes it the most bizarro is that it's a romantic comedy that manages to steer clear of 80 to 90% of the cliche traps that makes us hate them.
Which is ironic, because the original film was the source of a lot of the cliches of films that came later.
And you know, this movie reminds me, it reminded me of a movie we saw a couple weeks ago, That Awkward Moment, where it was basically, this movie could be retitled Me and My Asshole Friends. However, this movie managed to not do all the things wrong that movie did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Elliot, I'm sorry it didn't work for you. I mean, I didn't feel like crying, but the fact that, hey, it kept me laughing, like just snickering or chuckling, but laughing hard, like from the minute it started. Like, it comes out the gate with a good joke, and I was like, well, that's probably the only one. And I just kept laughing the whole time. Oh, one more thing I think we need to mention as a public service announcement. This thing is chock full of sex.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
All the time.
Nudity sex?
Well, no, not quite. I mean, teasing enough. But the thing is, if somebody, a lot of times people see the R rating, they go like, oh, they must say fuck a lot.
No.
Yeah, they say it, but they also do it.
They also fuck
constantly.
A whole bunch.
Yeah, it's Regina Hall and Kevin Hart going down on each other like every couple frames.
It's like, if anybody has a Kevin Hart fantasy, this is your movie.
And nowadays, rated R could just mean everybody smokes a lot of cigarettes. So there's really no telling anymore.
Yeah. So the fact that this movie has Joy Bryant and Paula Patton in it, it's already getting a good rating for me. Yeah.
I tell you, when you said a warning, this is not so much a warning as I found it a little weird. It's the only thing that was off-putting about the movie is they have a few gay jokes that made me feel like I was back in, like, 1995, 2000.
You mean 1986?
No, 1986, they would just straight out said it. Like, Monster Squad, they don't care.
Right, right.
But, and I'm not knocking
heroes
that movie.
Go and beat the crap out of gay guys so the audience gets a cheering moment in movies all the way back then.
And it wasn't a lot of references, but the references they did say, they weren't really tongue-in-cheek. So they were a little mean-spirited. Like, the part where she's like, oh, he's having a homosexual panic, and he's like, I'd rather chase a man's ass. And it's like, well, something wrong with that? Like, he said it in a pejorative way is the thing. Maybe I'm overly sensitive. I don't know. Maybe I'm overly sensitive.
I know 5 years from now, I'll be the one who's hunted with pitchforks and torches. But right now, you're taking a little fun.
Well, the part where she's like, where he's like, well, Joy Bryant's character's wearing a backpack. He's like, you've been wearing that backpack for a week. You started turning into a lesbian. And it's like, Really? Like, that's a joke you're gonna say?
That was funny.
Okay. Well, like, I guess I'm too sensitive.
You need to go hide in the castle, Martin.
No. Hey, look.
It was clear. It never came across as homophobic. It was just one of those things. Like, you're like, if you saw a woman wearing a plaid shirt for 2 days, you'd say that.
Well, it's just that I haven't heard those jokes in pop culture in a while. That's all. And so it sort of brought me back.
See the new generation. I know, man. After you, man.
I know. I'm gonna be Archie Barker.
No, look. I'll fully admit there are times I can be overly sensitive. So I am not the litmus test.
You and your whole damn generation. Well, anyway, so what do you guys give this?
Oh, I didn't even like consider how to...
Final thoughts.
My final thought is, wow, what a surprise this movie is. If you are an adult, not almost an adult, not just a newly formed adult, but
like
an adult
Turner.
Who is sexually active, and you like seeing beautiful or funny black people, it's a great movie to go see. I was not expecting to see anything in February that I liked at all, let alone this much. I enjoyed it from beginning to end, and I foresee a future where I get roped into seeing it again at some point. So I'm gonna give it 8.5 out of 10 condoms.
Wow, that's a lot of condoms.
Not so much. Yeah, I don't know what your nights are like, but that sounds about right.
Lord.
Endurance, man. That's why you do the cardio. Okay, I would say that it's a very funny movie. There are just a mile a minute jokes. Kevin Hart is hilarious in this. Only thing is I feel like they didn't spend enough time investing in the drama and the emotional weight of it. So when they did try to do it, it didn't come through as strong as I would have liked. So that being said, it's not a bad movie. I would give it, my favorite romantic comedy is Love Actually. So I would give it 6.5 Love Actually's out of 10.
That's your rating scale?
Yeah.
See, here are all the ways in which this film is different from Love Actually.
Well, honestly, you couldn't find two more different romantic comedies.
No, but I didn't give it a bad rating.
There were no black people in Love Actually.
There was the guy from Serenity, the guy from 12 Years a Slave,
the British African guy.
Oh yeah,
no, that was a different one.
There was in Love Blackshully.
That's the porn version.
Maybe you got to see that one, or then again, maybe you saw this one. And now we take a look back to a film you probably can't even see in the theater anymore.
Dollar theaters.
That movie is That Awkward Moment. And when I saw this, I thought That Awkward Moment was just the moment we realized Zac Efron wasn't going to quit after the Disney Channel was done with him.
No.
Zac Efron is determined to come out and, well, not come out, but come out and be the... give him time. You never know. It's not out of the question.
Well, now, speaking of Zac Efron...
He wants to be the new Brad Pitt.
Now, I don't know about that.
Yeah, no, he does, though. He's taking you big... You see, inch by inch, he's, like, inching his way towards less... like really childish roles and more adult stuff.
You couldn't see that because there's a lot of diversity to what he's done lately. Like in liberal arts, he had that one funny bit where he was incredibly hilarious.
Charlie St. Cloud.
Yeah, he's
playing kind of the villain in the upcoming movie as the villainous frat boy.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and even in this awkward moment, which is definitely not what you would call the high end of romantic comedies by any stretch of the imagination. It's not a Disney Channel level romantic comedy.
Well,
I wouldn't even call it pandering.
It's
really.
A fantasy world is what it is.
My big question about this and Zac Efron, is this pre or post rehab?
I didn't even know he went to rehab.
I didn't even
know
he went to rehab.
Are you guys serious? You didn't know?
I just don't read the gossip trade. So.
For cocaine. It was like a big deal.
Oh, I thought that was Justin Bieber. I didn't know.
No.
Is that what we're calling, getting with A-level starlets now?
Oh, wait. I thought he was in the movie High School Musical. I didn't realize that was a joke. So this movie stars indeed Zac Efron and his two best friends, played here by Miles Teller, who had a hell of a good 2013,
sure.
Especially in his leading role in the Spectacular Now. And Michael B. Jordan, who is quickly on his way to bigger and better things than That Awkward Moment.
Well, he made his name in Friday Night Lights. He was great in that.
I never actually have seen the TV show Friday Night Lights, but I hear it is quite good. And, of course, everybody knows who Zac Efron is. And the three of them are three guys who have been together since early college days. They've been friends for so long. They, those type of friends. They fuck with each other all the time. They kind of spend all their spare time together. They have routines where they go out to a bar and set each other up to hook up with chicks. Except for Michael B. Jordan, who does go out with them. But in fact, up until the beginning of this movie, he was married and to a really hot chick too. So mm-hmm. you just feel yep. for him right off the bat. You're like, oh, dude, that's got his, I mean,
especially the way it was in, broken to him.
Yeah, it's broken to his. Like, here's my lawyer, who, by the way, is the guy I'm fucking. I mean, was that actually
Morris Chestnut?
That really was
no.
Morris Chestnut.
No, it was.
No, yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
No, that wasn't him.
Yeah, it looked exactly like
no,
him.
No, that wasn't
it's
him.
Definitely not Morris
that
Chestnut.
That was the running joke in the film. The
yeah,
guy
it was
looked
a joke
like
in the
Morris
film.
Chestnut. I was like, okay. Are we sure he wasn't?
I really thought it was him until this moment.
Yeah. I can't think of what TV show he's been on, but it's like I've seen him before. He's most definitely not Morris Chestnut.
That feels like one of those onset.
He looks a little bit like him.
That feels like one of those onset jokes that they were like, we have to write this into the script. Because well, it was just too obvious.
Well, it led to one of my favorite phrases in any movie I've ever seen. It's like, who the fuck is Morris Chestnut?
So basically, they come to this point with like, you know, trying to make Michael B. Jordan feel better. The other two guys take a pact. We are not going to be in a relationship. We are all going to be single dudes, and we're going to do the single dude thing. We're just going to rack up points, and it's going to be awesome. Of course,
that's mature and responsible.
Yeah, well, it doesn't last but bad. 2 seconds before they all start falling off the wagon and getting into more serious relationships. Zac Efron starts falling for Imogen Poots, and once again, aside from her last name, who could blame him? you know you're a star. It's not too late to change your name. Because Cage did it after he was in a few movies. You can do it too, Imogen.
hey, you know, I think that's her thing. It's like, I'm going to show you. I'm going to be a big star even with this last
name. I'm going to have a farty last name.
I think she likes making people say it.
Right.
She should change her last name to Heap.
Poots on set. Poots on set.
Ew.
They have their own weird sort of back and forth thing, like early first night hookup, and then he thinks she's a hooker because of some really contrived comedy bit about something he read in a men's magazine. And of course, she's like there was ever a chance anyone would ever hook up with you again after you thought they were a hooker and told all your friends.
Well, if you look like Zac Efron.
He's Zac Efron.
But yeah, if you look like Zac Efron.
He's actually prettier than her.
That's true. He could probably have beat her the first time.
And on top of that,
you go, oh, you didn't mean it.
On top of that, he has one of those only in romantic comedy jobs. He's like,
Miles Teller. Yeah. They design book covers.
And they make a bunch of money.
They design horrible book covers. Yeah. And insult their clients by saying like, oh, we don't want to do what you want to do. We drew a pair of shoes on here because women love shoes.
Yeah,
the client goes, oh, that is true. We do love shoes.
The only person I've ever seen be that degrading to their clients is John Hamm and Mad Men. Right. He can't get away with it because he's John Hamm. Not even Zac Efron would go up to John Hamm. John Hamm's like just sexiness would just make Zac Efron disappear.
He would
like the Wicked Witch of the West. he would leech it. That's how he keeps it. He just leeches every once in a while grabs a Disney male star. And just,
well, that's what happened to Shia LaBeouf.
He life forces them.
Yeah. There could only be one.
Right. Meanwhile, Miles Teller puts himself in the weird situation of getting involved with their one female friend, played by Mackenzie Davis, who, you know, they've been friends with as long as each other, who's also helps them all hook up in the bar, but they have one of those drunken hookup nights. Before you know it, they're falling in love.
And that's also a thing that happens in real life. You have a female friend who helps you hook up with other women.
Yeah, right.
Although I have hooked up with female friends before, I have that awkward drunken, and then the next day you're like, oh, fuck, what did we
that's
do?
That's that awkward moment.
That's the awkward moment.
In my experience, like, female friends will try, but they're not as good as she is. Like, she just has one line and they're in. That's it.
True. She's amazing.
But, you know, I think the biggest problem of this film, ultimately, is that there is no story at all of any kind. It's really just a series of meet-cutes and really contrived problems. Like, ultimately, the one issue in this movie is, we had a bet! Not really. You were kind of joking around on the street, and it was a half serious sounding.
Well, no, not only that. Because of this half bet they have that they insist on holding on to, it takes these guys from being immature to being assholes to being psychopaths.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's psychotic that you would have girls that you love and they're in love with you and you destroy them just because you made a bet with your bros. Not even a bet. You just like kind of said like, oh, we have a pact. It's like, there is no universe where you don't go like, dude, I know what I said, but whatever.
Yeah, they do some truly heinous stuff in order to like, you know, keep the movie going. Really. Well, you're like, no one would do that.
Well, I agree, but Michael B. Jordan's character is sort of the only redeeming one of the bunch.
Oh, I disagree.
Well, I mean, he's not just fucking women over the entire time.
Okay, okay.
He's fucking himself over,
but... the problem is he's, like, so emasculated in this film as to be kind of embarrassing to watch.
No, but I'm just saying he's not...
The other two are overly masculine.
Well, not only that, but, like, as I watch this film, like, there's so much that goes on between Miles Teller and Zac Efron where it just became clear to me, like, this movie was written for those two characters.
Yeah.
And they shoehorned Michael B. Jordan's character in here because they're like, hey, let's give it some diversity, or he's hot, or just write him in. So he kind of bounces in and out. And even his story with his wife, it's so much like, oh, I can't believe she's such a bitch and she would do me like this. And the only two times they spent any time with her, she was able to go like, yeah, well, do you remember when you did this? Cut! Okay, let's not focus on what I did. Yeah. Let's make it all about you.
What do you think, JC? You haven't had much to say so far.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you guys have said. It's kind of, it goes from bit to bit. Michael B. Jordan's character is kind of shoehorned in. It's kind of crappy the way his, story worked out to where his wife basically, because he's a doctor, his wife basically needs something from him. And that's kind of what rekindles them. And it's like, oh, she needed something from him. And that's what sort of gets the spark going. It's not.
Yeah, and as an audience member, you're sitting there going, I don't have to tell you what's going to happen here.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of Michael B. Jordan's character, I didn't so much see him as emasculated as I know a bunch of guys who get on this train of, okay, I go to school, this is what I do, and then I get married, and they get into this this myth that I have to be married by a certain age, and that's what happened to Michael B. Jordan's character.
Yeah.
They got married before he was ready, so I sort of saw more that way than emasculated.
He totally in high school should have gone with his friends to check out that meteorite instead.
But yeah.
Made a bad decision.
Well, the problem is he was already cyborg.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, as much as we've been talking about what's wrong with this movie, I will say this for it, is that I expected it to be a complete piece of shit. And I found myself laughing more than I expected.
Yeah, no.
And a lot of it from Miles Teller. He's got a great sense of humor. He's like the new, Ryan, I don't know. He's very John Cusack in this movie.
Yeah, he's easily the saving grace of this movie. Carries it pretty much all on his shoulders, even though the bulk of the story kind of follows Zac Efron around. That story kind of loses its steam really quickly, and the turn that Miles Teller's character goes through in the middle, that picks it right back up and carries it the rest of the way.
Oh, I completely agree. His relationship is the most fun one to watch. Like, he and his girl together are actually really charming and entertaining.
Well, they have chemistry.
Together. They have real chemistry together. Whereas both Zac Efron and Imogen Poots are very beautiful people. I never really detected much of a spark between them.
Right.
Well, I don't know what that says.
I know what I'm intimating. You know,
what was that whole deal, stealing the key from the real estate agent for the house? It's like,
They stole it. They went to go look at an expensive house and then went in and like stole a key to a private park that only people in rich area can go into. And then that became the sort of centerpiece of the story after that. I'm like, I don't know. It just felt so like, well, we got to put something here.
Well, it felt like the person who wrote this really liked Notting Hill and was like, well, I got to put a garden in here
but
somewhere.
Didn't get it at all. Because I actually really like Notting Hill.
No, I love Notting Hill.
And this ain't no Notting Hill.
Okay, I agree. And if my next statement is not damning with faint praise, I don't know what is, but it had a real shot at being sort of as preachy and as self-indulgent as Garden State. And it avoided that, thank God.
Oh, I actually like Garden State myself. Sorry. Yeah,
I love Garden State. That's a very polarizing movie.
It is.
I liked it, but when people tell me, I've had people tell me who didn't like it, I was like, wow, you didn't? And when they explained why, I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah. I didn't see it that way.
Yeah, if it hit you in that way, I can see that.
But I do know that it was kind of marketed as like a romantic comedy for guys, and we're four dudes who are reviewing it. I kind of wish Ashley had seen it to kind of see, to throw her two cents in on it, but, yeah, I mean, I can see how women sort of hate the concept of this and think it's dumb and doesn't work. And while the story doesn't really work on us, I think the performances worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it's odd that, definitely this is a movie that, like, at least the script was to four guys.
Yeah.
Like a romantic
It was a fantasy
dudes,
world.
And yet it, like, felt like along the way there was a lot of, like, you know what, maybe we need to,
let's pull back on some of this.
Pull back on this, make it a little bit more of a traditional romantic comedy, give the woman some more stuff in here, which is fine if it had been done with any sort of craft, but all those moments you feel like you can, you feel like you're in the writing room when they happen.
No, yeah, the moment where Mackenzie Dawn's character, her father insults her subtly. I'm like, okay, that was inserted. That was, yeah, that was focus grouped. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was focus grouped.
Well, yeah, you get things like Zac Efron shows up to a party, a dress up party, yeah, and he's dressed up in costume.
How would you not know
rock
that?
Rock out with your cock out with a dildo hanging from his pants. And you get there and everybody's in black tie. Okay, you realize you screwed up, but any person, any normal, half-normal person would turn around and take that off or go home and change and come back.
Would leave immediately. Like, one yeah. person had seen him when he walked in the
yeah, door. One person.
I was like, no, no, going home now. Plus, who the hell thinks it's a dress-up party means wear, like,
thank
a
you.
Crazy costume? No! Yeah. When you're getting dressed, come on, I've never... No, I'm sorry. That was very unconvincing.
Very
and plus,
contrived.
Anybody yeah. who showed up to my actual costume party wearing that outfit would have to leave.
Damn
because
it.
They're just kind of a douchebag.
I was actually going to use that.
Speaking of douchebag, speaking of douchebag, without even saying what it is, what he finally ends up doing to yes. Imogene Poots was just like, man.
There ain't no coming back from
that. Yeah, he doesn't come back from that. Yeah.
And I was like, what brain tells you, like, this is okay?
The worst part is that I actually kind of, I felt for Zac Efron, the actor in this, because he was trying.
Sure.
He was giving it his all, and he's not a bad actor.
No,
we keep
no.
saying he's genuinely not a bad actor, but the motherfucker needs his own 7 or 12 monkeys.
Yes.
To go to the next level.
You really stuck on his Brad Pitt thing.
I am,
with him.
I'm telling you, he's got that kind of shot.
He's
got
to do a Thelma and Louise first.
Yeah, he's so good looking, but he's not good looking to the point, now that he's getting older, that he's got that sort of like, nah, he's too pretty good looking. He's still got, when he gets a little scruff, he's got enough of a rough edge. You can see yeah, him.
He went from like 18 to 35, like,
yeah, exactly.
He's not Rob Lowe.
No, it's not. So I'm rooting for Zach. I'm just like, man, you got to stop taking these scripts because this was a really crappy script that everybody was working at really hard in it
yeah.
to make it seem better than it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, that's true.
And that was mainly the thing I think that kept me going through this. Like you said, Miles Teller is becoming quickly one of the funnier guys right now who's appearing in these type
right.
of films. He's obviously naturally gifted at just going. Mm-hmm. Seems like one of those guys, just point him at a camera and let him loose.
No, he's funnier in this than Ryan Reynolds was in Van Wilder to me.
I've never
seen that. I don't like that analogy. I don't. Okay.
You don't like Ralph Star?
No. It just was just.
I never saw it because Corey.
Funny white guys, come on.
I never saw it because Corey was so much in hate
oh,
with
I
that
know.
Movie. Like,
really?
He was like viciously in hate.
Van Wilder?
So I was like, wow.
Yeah, he
that?
Was.
Okay.
He scared
it.
Me away from it.
Yeah. So
he
I've never,
he also scared
I've
me from,
seen it.
He scared me away from Jingle All the Way. And then when I finally saw it, I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, Jingle All the Way is funny. Except they're making a sequel now.
I know Larry the Cable Guy.
That's going to be quality.
That's unfortunate.
That's Larry the Cable Guy's job, is to do sequels for genuine action stars. I don't know why. He was in the Tooth Fairy,
right.
too.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, he was also in the we're going to exploit the racial minorities movie crossover with Madea and Larry the Cable Guy last year, I think.
Yeah, I think next he's doing another sequel to XXX.
Jesus Christ.
I'm kidding.
That seemed believable.
Brian gets it.
I was like, there's no way that would work.
He's taken over Paul Walker's role in the Fast and the Furious movies.
He's Mater in Fast and the Furious. Oh,
all
good
right.
Lord.
Well, let's do final thoughts. Elliot?
I actually enjoyed it to a certain degree because I did recognize a lot of people I have known in Michael B. Jordan's character, and Miles Teller was really funny, and Zac Efron was really trying. I give it 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10 what?
7 unrealistic entourage fantasies for guys out of 10.
That's a good one.
That's good.
What about you, JC?
It goes to show that if you have kind of a questionable script, just hire actors that give a shit and will try really hard to turn out a good performance, and it'll carry your movie a long way. There was kind of the mix and tone of like the raunchy bits toward back to standard rom-com to, oh, we have to be raunchy again. So that kind of took me out of it a little bit. But in the end, I mean, I kind of, as someone who likes romantic comedies, I dug it a little bit. I'll probably watch it again and then never again after that. But, I'd say 5.5 out of 10 hours stuck with an erection after taking it right back.
Yeah, After four, you call him Bragg.
I can't believe that that joke didn't go on. That was one of those ones you're like, okay, this feels like the earlier version of the script. This was a much bigger joke.
And that's kind of one of those things I was like, oh, this is the kind of movie you're going to be cool. I'm down with this. And then, like, never again.
Yeah, it just like it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, we all took Viagra or whatever. Martin?
Yeah, this is something of a Frankenstein of a movie. Like, we're all talking about how it was put together. And it has that feeling that it started out as something completely different. And it came to this. And everything that's good about it is because of the actors that are in it. And part of me wants to give it credit. Like, hey, man, you show what actors can do, like JC said, when they give a shit. But also it's like, oh, it's, but you put these good actors through so much pain and made them work so hard for almost a zero sum. It's not terrible like I thought it would be. However, especially after seeing About last night, it shows me like what this could have been and so wasn't. I would have to give it. Out of 10, I give it 4 to completely misogynistic, insulting book cover designs.
They really were, weren't they?
Yeah.
This is like the opposite of Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Well, not the movie. It was exactly the same as that. Yeah, I'm kind of with there with everything you guys are saying about it. I think that this is just mediocre, but ultimately largely inoffensive stuff.
Inoffensive?
I watched the whole thing and I was like, you know, I'm like sitting here. I'm not like bored out of my mind. I'm interested in some parts. Every once in a while it wins me back for a couple seconds. I like the performances. But by the end, it was just like, it was like when you eat a quick meal just to eat and it doesn't taste bad, but you got to get going. You know, you're like, okay, you're not even thinking about it. You're doing something else while you're eating. Like, okay, I'm full now. That's good. I'm glad I had that breakfast. So,
it's like a microwave TV dinner.
Yeah, it's like a microwave TV dinner and not one of the better ones. So I'm going to give this, 5 out of 10 dreamy Zac Efron stares.
Oh my god.
Man, you and Zac Efron.
I'm just telling you, he's gonna be big. His time is yet to come. We will all look back and be like, man, we should have known that guy was gonna be huge.
I hope somebody saves this, and if he's not
Chris knew.
Or maybe you were lucky enough to see this one. Is it just because it currently is winter? I mean, is that why they're releasing this movie? Is there any other merit whatsoever to Akiva Goldsman's Winter's Tale? Now, as far as I could tell from the trailers, this looked like some weird amalgam of The Time Traveler's Wife with a brain-dead version of The Fountain and also some forgotten Shakespeare. So, and this highly suspect review, which is highly suspect because I, Brian Salisbury, am on it, and I have not seen the movie. But luckily, I have with me two people who actually sat through it. To my left is JC.
What up?
And then to his left is Bo.
Hello.
You guys seem like the perfect core audience to go see a rom-drom starring Colin Farrell and Jessica Brown Finley.
No, it's more like a rom fan. This is a solid fantasy, actually, and you would never know it, as you said, if you look at the trailer, and trailers lie, you get kind of this disjointed time traveling love story, and that's certainly there, no question about it, but there's a little bit more, and they are for some reason shying away from that in the advertising, which is odd because it's based on a book that was insanely popular in the 80s. Like when I was in middle school and high school, like if you were especially ladies seemed to like this, but if you were, you know, it was one of those kind of like little, you know, unpopular kid books to go to. And I have a lot of friends who are asking me about, like, well, how was it? Because they've seen this trailer and been like, this looks like nothing that the book was about.
So,
my choice in seeing this movie was kind of maybe not the wisest choice, because the way my brain processed information when I casually watched the trailer was, saw the trailer, love story, Colin Farrell, Valentine's Day. Cool, I have all the information I need. Oh, wait, it's called A Winter's Tale. What do I know about A Winter's Tale? Well, there was that joke in The World's End where they mentioned that this is from a Shakespeare play, so this must be a Shakespearean adaptation, and nope, not even a little bit.
Even a little bit. And it's funny, the reason that you are currently hearing this strange Whitman sampler pack of rom-droms and rom-com reviews is because it seems like there was a big rush this year to get a lot of shit out in time for Valentine's Day, not just one thing, and it all seems to be based on 80s properties, whether it's this insanely popular 80s book, or we have two remakes of 80s romantic films
right,
also kind of jammed in there. But okay, so Winter's Tale looks like it's set in both present-day Manhattan and turn-of-the-century Manhattan.
It starts off in a, like, kind of alternate Edwardian Edwardian New York.
Okay.
So turn of the century around.
I prefer a Jacobian New York myself.
I think they're skewing it a little more towards, oh, this is happening in 1914, 1915. Although I believe in the book, it's actually a little bit earlier than that. But they want to, hey, it's 100 years. And it starts off with Colin Farrell's character, who Peter Lake. He's being pursued by this, you know, gang of thugs that are trying to kill him, and all of a sudden he runs into a magic horse, and the magic horse saves him.
It sounds like the setup for a joke. Colin Farrell's walking along and runs into a magic horse.
Yeah.
He tells him, take the damn beanie cap off. It's 95 degrees out. What are you, an L.A. douchebag?
A Mick and a Pegasus walk into a bar. What happens next? Well, what happens next is the horse takes him to, you know, takes him to this house with this woman in it who is dying of consumption, and he attempts to break into the house because he is a professional thief. He ends up getting caught by the woman, and they have love. They sit down for a nice cup of tea, and he falls in love with her.
All right. Yeah. So, looking at the rest of this cast, we also have Jennifer Connelly, Russell Crowe, Eva Marie Saint, who is very much still alive, apparently.
Yep. And there's got to be one name that jumps out at you with the name with who he's playing.
Will Smith as Lucifer.
Yep.
I'm gonna repeat that. Will Smith, one of the nicest guys in Hollywood, is playing Lucifer. That's actually a legitimate piece of stunt casting. I like that.
You know, it's not like he's going to come up and, you know, look like a Balrog.
Right. It'd
be hard to corner the market in souls if you're, like, you know, sporting flaming wings.
Now, this is a story all about how I'm going to grab your soul and drag it on down.
Yeah.
Is that not what happens in the movie?
I think we can attest to how shocked the audience was as soon as he
came. Yeah, when he shows up, like, literally, and he's, you know, got these big diamond earrings and he's laying down
a Jeff Goldblum pose.
You know, yeah, very much. In fact, Jeff Goldblum would have been perfect for this role.
This movie just went up 30 points in my estimation. Now I kind of want to see it. So,
you know, there's the heavies, and, you know, Will Smith's character is not, even though he's playing the devil, is not necessarily the heavy in this. The real heavy is Russell Crowe.
Well,
and he is a scenery.
Have you seen him lately? He's always the heavy.
He's a scenery chewing motherfucker in this, and
that's
he's actually
to be the heavy.
He's really enjoyable, at least to me. He's one of the more enjoyable parts about the movie. You know, he's really relishing being the heavy. He's, you know, nominally he's this, you know, leader of a thug gang. In reality, he's a demon. There's a lot of magical reality in this. A lot of, hey, you know, just accept this. You know, people know that he's a demon. He's kind of the ward keeper of, you know, this mythical Manhattan area. You know, and you know, between that and the magic horse, you're like, okay, well, this is not, you know, this isn't your everyday run-of-the-mill love story by any stretch of imagination.
So we've got it set up as to what this movie is. Now, what I'm interested to know from you guys, is it any good?
I'm gonna say no.
Well, that's
I'm gonna say yes, but
okay. Oh, great.
I'll let JC go first.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of wasn't expecting all of the, and I didn't know anything about the book, so I didn't know anything about the story other than my mistaken presumption of thinking it was a Shakespearean adaptation. Yeah, I mean, it's all the weird fantasy and religion elements I just wasn't ready for, wasn't expecting, and so it wasn't the movie I thought I was going to see, so it all just kind of hit me the wrong way, and because it just felt like I was getting sucker punched left and right the entire movie, and I never could really lock into what was happening. Like, Russell Crowe is great. He does chew up the scenery in a really great way. Colin Farrell is even good every time he's on screen, but I could never get past all of the strange twists and turns.
I do like the fact that you said sucker punch and then immediately mentioned Russell Crowe. That was good.
And I'm right there on board with them. This movie's going to bomb horribly, and it's completely the fault of its marketing department. Like I said, they're not playing to their strengths. I think the marketing team went with the assumption that, well, people who like the book are just going to see it anyway, and therefore we're going to repackage it and say that it's just this quaint little love story, which it's not by any stretch of the imagination. That being said, I knew what I was, I at least had a vague idea. I'd never read the book, but I did a little research. I knew what to go in expecting. I got that. I think it's a very charming and sweet love story. It kind of goes off the rails in the third act, but it does get back on track by the very end. I really like the fantastic elements. It reminded me, it doesn't have the whimsy and fun, but it did remind me a lot of Stardust. which is a movie that I really like. And what it does have, what it shares in common with Stardust, is it's got a lot of sweetness. It's got a lot of heart. You know, I dug it for that. And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. This was playing to a lot of my buttons. I am a cheap romantic. I am a sentimentalist. I'm a maudlin Irish guy. So having a movie about a maudlin Irish guy falling in love with a hot redhead, consumptive though she might be, was definitely pushing a lot of buttons.
And it was a hot redhead, not just an amber beer, right?
No. Okay. It was a hot redhead.
All right.
Almost as good as an amber beer. So yeah, I mean, I found myself tearing up. Like JC said, you've got Russell doing a great job here. Colin Farrell's very charismatic. The lead female, Jessica Brown Findlay, as Beverly Penn, she's just charming as all hell. Absolutely gorgeous. She's from Downton Abbey for people who are watchers of that. And then you've got this great supporting cast with William Hurt, Jennifer Connelly. There is a major turn at the end of the second act where there's a time shift and it goes to the present day, and it loses a lot of its momentum there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, kind of goes off the rail, but does bring it back. The one thing that I do have to say is if you're a fan of this book, you're probably more than likely going to be disappointed because it looks like they took a severe razor to it.
Yeah.
There are significant characters missing. There are significant plot points missing. But not having read the book, but having read some synopses, I think they do maintain the spirit of the material. And like I said, I walked out thinking it was really pleasant, feeling really, really sorry for it because it's not going to get seen. And for my money, it's probably, I didn't see the other two movies, but I'll lay money that it's the better romance of the three.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. One of the things that really concerned me about this movie, apart from, as you were saying, the lackluster marketing, was the fact that Akiva Goldsman is directing here, which he is not. He's not somebody that directs often. The only other thing he's directed was actually the TV show Kings. So he's mostly a writer, and he is a fantastically uneven script writer. I mean, you got things like The Client and The Time to Kill, and
he's a script doctor. He's someone that you hand a book to, and he farts it out. And there are definitely signs that this was somewhat farted out, but I do think his heart was in it a little because he did know he was going to be directing it. He does a workmanlike job, which is sad because I think that this material in the hands of somebody really, really more than competent would really sing. And I think we could have ended up with another Stardust or something along those lines.
I'm just glad it's not another Batman and Robin, which he also wrote.
Oh, God.
It blows my mind that he's got this weird turd sandwich of Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, and then right in the middle of that somehow is A Time to Kill. So that's one of the things that kind of concerned me about this, is such an uneven filmmaker, even before he's a director, but you're saying, you know, at least a workmanlike job, not a subpar job, but
I gotta admit, I went into this kind of wondering where I was going to fall apart, and it really kept me going through, like I said, up until the second, the third act. And even then, by that point, I was so into it that I was so on its side that I was willing to let it slide. So, yeah, this is definitely my vote for if you have the date movie, this is the good one.
Well, that's it's interesting because we had most of these movies screening on the exact same night, which I think some of the movies are made almost with the knowledge that they're all going to be released at the same time. So it's almost like they're banking on some dollars just coming from, I want to go to that one. It's sold out. All right. That one.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
We'll split the difference from RoboCop three ways.
But JC, this unfortunately didn't work for you, it sounds like.
No, not really. You know, I should have done more research going in.
Also, you should have warmed up your heart a little and not had it be a black pit in your heart, in your chest.
As Brian can attest, I actually like romantic stories a lot.
Way more than any man probably should. I can definitely attest to that.
You hate Pegasi is what you're saying.
I like horses too. I will agree that I haven't seen the other two movies.
Like horses and romances?
Yeah.
That beard is fake, isn't it?
His OK Cupid profile reads like a Lisa Frank folder from third grade.
It sounds like a Lisa Loeb song.
I will agree that of the three new movies coming out, this is probably the best love story of the three, which is probably why I was drawn to this movie based on the trailer. Fun fact about the trailer, though, it's probably one of the only times that they'll mention that the writer is an Academy Award-winning writer who won for an adapted screenplay.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's the second trailer. I'd never seen the second trailer until after I saw this movie, but it's...
Isn't Akiva Goldsman also the writer on this one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like I said, he's adopted some real turds. In fact, out of what he's adapted, I think this is, you know, one of the coolest books he's ever been handed, and unfortunately, I don't think he was up to the task of really capturing it. But what he did capture, you know, it worked for me on a nice, like, hey, if this came on cable, I'd probably let you watch it for, you know, to see all the warm, gooey parts again.
Well, before we all start flirting with each other on Match.com, maybe we should go ahead and move into your final thoughts and your rankings. I'll start with you, JC.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of said everything I wanted to say.
Well, say it again, damn it!
parts of it worked. The love story in it worked. I just wish there was more of the love story in it. Because it's you know, again, fault of the marketing. It's marketed as a love story, and it's only a portion of the entire thing. The rest of it, too many twists and turns. I felt like I was getting sucker punched by every nuance and everything that just was completely unexpected. In the end, I was with a lot of the audience members. A lot of the audience members I saw with kind of stood up as soon as the movie was over and said, "What was that?" So I would say 4 out of 10. I don't know.
Pegasi?
Yeah. It's the only time I couldn't think of a thing.
And Bo.
I will, I gotta say, I'm in the very, very narrow niche that this movie has unfortunately made for itself. Everything that he says was a sucker punch, I found charming. I think if somebody knows what they're going into and, you know, does a little research.
And happens to be a literate Irish softie.
I think they'll enjoy this movie as much as I did. You know, yeah, by next year we'll have forgotten this, but, I enjoyed my time in the theater, so it's got that going for it. I give it, I'd say 4 out of 10 little-known Shakespeare plays.
Wow, you liked it that much, and you still only gave it a 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, fair enough. But I was like, yes, and challenge me on it, and I'll punch you in the face, like Russell Crowe with a phone book, or just a phone. You know what? Before we go, I have to applaud you, gentlemen. Neither one of you made a single reference to the Stark family, to Game of Thrones, to the fact that winter is coming. None of that. And I'm so glad, because that would be a horrible thing to mention on this review.
Because I'm really fucking tired of winter.
Well, winter's tail came all over my face. What?
But the truth of the matter is, you probably
saw this one.
Well, I'm just glad the movie ended, even if the love didn't, because, damn.
Oh, God, this movie. Oh, God.
I can safely say, of all the movies that came out this Valentine's Day, we drew the short end of the Valentine's Day arrow. That's
look,
for sure.
Look, I don't have hemorrhoids. This movie made me feel like I had hemorrhoids.
Wait, are you saying this movie is a swelling on your anus?
No, I'm saying it was tough to sit through.
Oh, I see.
Ugh.
Okay. I can understand how you felt. You know, I've seen the original Endless Love with Brooke Shields, and I barely remember it, but I do know that I did not like it at all. And this is from someone, even as a teenager, I didn't mind romantic films. There's quite a few romantic films from my youth I really liked, but I thought it was trickly garbage then. This is worse. And this is the 2014 remake of it. And how did I know right from the get-go this is going to be worse? Because, you know, sometimes you can take a really bad or mediocre movie and remake it and find good stuff, a good way to tell the story. You know, I mean, Ocean's 11 is a great example where they took a mediocre film and made it into a really good film. It's because right when it opened, they show you the cast. You notice there was never any opening credits at all to this? Like, none.
Nobody wanted credit for
this. Endless Love anywhere. But one of the first people you see is Alex Pettifer, and I said, we're fucked.
Yeah. Red flag numero uno.
Oh, my God. I hate that guy so much. He is my latest block of wood actor hatred right now. And the sad thing is sometimes he's in movies that are, like, not bad movies, but then you're so bad in them.
It's funny. It's like you think of Block of Woods. Why didn't they get Jai Courtney or Garrett Hedlund? It's like, no, Alex Pettifer will be fine.
Alex Pettifer is even worse than those guys.
He's making me pine, no pun intended, for fucking Garrett Hedlund? Yeah, this guy needs to be exiled from this country forever. Are you kidding me?
You know what? We even made sure on Endless Love that we were not going to be just going into this with, like, dudes sitting there with their arms crossed all mad because we have to sit through a romantic film. We brought Ashley with us.
They did. I went there.
We had to. You were our safety.
I know. I did my best. I tried to keep my laughter to myself. It was difficult when a grown adult, well, not grown adult, 18-year-old child says that, a book reminded him of how much he likes reading.
Oh my God, he said
Who
that!
Who are you?
There was a moment in the theater where, like, that was filled with maybe not even 14-year-old girls, like, filled with it. I got the feeling, like, because everyone seemed to know a teacher that was in the front row, so apparently they must have gotten a hold of a stack of passes and gave him
a ninth
class.
Grade lit class showed up for this film.
And
do they know the Lego movie's out? Yeah, I mean, seriously. If kids are writing papers on something.
The whole audience is quiet during that, except for the critics row, who all start laughing uproariously.
You reminded me that I like to read.
Yeah, it was like a promotion for Book It. Do they still do Book It? Is that all this movie is? Is like, hey, kids, remember that reading is good, and the way we're going to remind you is that we're going to make movies look like shit.
You know, and that's the thing, is this movie knows exactly what it is, and it does not give a fuck. This is the Hallmark card section at your local CVS, is what this is. There's just no attempt to make this be more than the sum of its parts at all. The story here follows Gabriella Wilde, who plays Jade Butterfield, who is, to her credit, like, absolutely gorgeous. I mean, she is a knockout. Beautiful blue eyes, just like, just a perfect little innocence to her. I can't believe, what, didn't she play the bad girl in something recently? In Carrie?
Yeah.
Is weird.
She is angelic. Like, she is so beautiful that I think angelic is the right adjective for her. What she's doing in this movie is beyond.
She's so angelic, in fact, that it's hard to feel any sort of sex desire towards her.
Yeah.
Just like, wow.
I have this thing in movies where it's like, I know that the actress is probably over 18, but when you flat out tell me she's 17 and then we watch a sex scene with her in it, I'm just like, I don't feel like I should be watching this.
Totally. And then there's a narrative voiceover right from the beginning,
because
they don't want to fuck with actually telling you a story in the sense of, like, having the story happen. They just want to get it started. So they just explain to you right off the bat that apparently she was broken all through high school because her brother, Chris, died at some point during
The first lines of the movie is, she was a lonely girl because her brother had died. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Thanks, exposition, voice of God.
I have never been more envious of a dead person. I had another hour and a half with her.
Hey, we see it's graduation day, and right off the bat it's like, oh, and now Alex Pettifer, the Block of Wood, plays David Axelrod.
Oh,
not even
God's
kidding
sake.
That's the character's name.
How is that not a porn star
by
name?
By the way, is a mechanic at his father's garage, so Axelrod.
Oh my God. I'm going to get up and walk out of this review. This movie is fucking horrible.
It's not my pun.
No, I know. And it's a pun, and I hate it that much. That's how bad this movie is.
Right off the bat, like, I've liked her all through high school, and now is my final chance to go and tell her that I like her.
It's like, dumbass, why would you?
All through high school, but I've been too broken by my brother's death and too sad and shy to say anything to
him. Okay, right there, I'm going to stop you, and I'm going to stop this movie. You realize that shy is not the same as mentally challenged, right? Because all through this movie, they portray her as somebody who there is like an extra chromosome or there's something wrong in her head. It's like, that's not what shy people are like. They don't run around with their arms like
She's like,
well, to be
she
fair,
wasn't quirky. She wasn't quirky. She was quirky. That's the problem.
Some weird sort of super attractive version of Down syndrome. It's like Up syndrome or something. I don't know what it is, but
But to be fair, she was being stalked by some 30-year-old who's been hanging out at her high school for 4 years.
He did look like he was 30.
Is he? I think he looked like he was thirty.
It was so awkward. I was like, get your hands off that beautiful young woman.
He's 23, but he does look a lot older than.
All right, that's an age.
And he's supposed to be playing 17. But still, some people old. She looks like she's maybe aging slower than she should be. He looks like he's aging faster. But either way, they're supposed to be the same age. And the movie, like I said, there's no real plot here at this point. Just that like little expositional voiceover, so you know what these characters' backgrounds are and why they have fallen instantaneously head over heels in love with each other the moment they finally exchange words with each other.
Yeah, it's that old story: Chloe meets Hurl, Hurl loves Chloe.
Of course,
fuck this movie.
She talking to her overbearing father, Jade Butterfield, whose father is played by.
That's not a real name. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's
his father,
her name.
Hugh Butterfield.
I thought his last name was Jasshole. No. I thought it was Hugh Jasshole.
He's played by Bruce Greenwood, which is funny because there's a point where he comes at Alex Pettifer with a bat, and I was like, it's Batman, which is only funny if you realize that he has in fact voiced Batman
before. Which I didn't, so I thought you were going senile. I thought you were becoming like the girl in this movie.
No, I swear, it was funny to me.
But I'm glad something in this movie was.
But he, like, you know, she's like, Daddy, I want to have a birthday for my graduation present.
Because apparently she's four.
Instead of a car or something else. And the deal is, their family is rich, 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 rich. They are just total richers. And and he's like, really? You want to throw a party? But I don't even know you had friends. And neither
he's
did
really
you.
Insulting
Which was
scene.
Rude. Yeah. Yeah, real rude.
Well, let's face it, he's a dick from the get-go.
Yeah,
he's the
That's
villain
true.
Of this movie.
Because you look at this girl and you're like, oh, you must be a loser in high school with no bullshit.
But they have the most boring, sanitized party imaginable. Like seriously, the guy's like, you know, it's just her family around, except for Alex Pettifer, who's like, oh, I can take care of this. So he calls the cops on the other party
that
his ex-girlfriend, who's still in love with him, was throwing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're supposed to like these characters?
This is the problem, is on the one hand, you have this ridiculously, comically overbearing father who apparently doesn't like David because he's poor. Like, that's the only thing he can drudge up is, well, I don't like him because he likes my daughter and he does not come from money. And it's like, okay, well, you're a jackass. But on the other hand, you have these two kids who have no concept of consequences whatsoever, and they just do stupid things that I'll give you an example. If you know this guy doesn't like you, maybe don't take his daughter's virginity in his house while he's upstairs asleep. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
But the funny thing is the movie tries to not make it creepy by having her be the predator.
Yeah.
Like, she totally is the predator in every sequence of this film. Yeah, not that predator.
Oh, okay.
Like, he's like, no, come on, I don't think that this is appropriate. And she's like, you're gonna fuck me now!
Yeah, it's a little scary, actually.
She's like, I've been shy all through high school, and I'm about to go to an internship to medical school, which means, like, probably 6-8 more years of just in school and being serious. And in this next couple weeks, I'm gonna take some dick all over the goddamn place.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm...
Double-hinged mandible.
I'm going to take you exactly...
That takes me back to my high school years.
They overplay him as such a nice guy. And, like, just like, I love her so much. I'm just so wrapped up. I'm like... And the whole idea of them being irresponsible, like, okay, I get that. Like, of the conceptually of, like, high school kids head over heels in love to the point of being fucking idiots about shit, yes. But a lot is taken away from it by the fact that he's always hyper-conscious of doing the right thing.
Yeah, unless she doesn't want to do the right thing, and then, okay, fine. Like, come on, dude.
It's just, it's...
I'd make a lot of poor choices if that woman asked me to fair.
I guess that's true.
I would, too. And I would make a lot of poor choices if Alex Pettifer was coming up to me, which is mainly kill him and bury him in a shallow grave.
Oh, that was, you know, okay, so the darker side of this character, if you could even fucking call it that.
Ridiculous, like... This is the secret the movie is working up to.
If Candy,
I thought it was that he could barely read, but that's not it.
You remind me how much I like to read. Like, really? Fuck off. If Candy has a darker side, then this movie has a darker side. And so the darker side of him is he's had this rap where he beat somebody up. So he's got and you find out like there was a reason it had to do with his family and another man, whatever. But the thing that makes me laugh about that is the whole time he's fighting this past where he was really violent, and yet everyone and their brother in this movie is telling him, you gotta fight for her. She's the kind of girl you gotta fight for. You gotta fight. I'm like, the problem is he fights people! Yeah, stop telling him that!
And that's even funnier. That's not even really a problem that he has.
No!
It's like, the scenario in which he was charged with assault before was one of those, like, yeah, can't blame anyone for being the guy to throw a punch in that situation. And later in the movie, when Bruce Greenwood, in his nefarious supervillain plan to paint this guy as negative a brush as possible so his daughter won't, like, ruin her life, her, that he's programmed for her, because of him, you know, does everything except for spit in his eyes to get this guy to punch him. Yeah. And then is like, look, see, he punched me. He's a monster.
Who, by the way, is bailed out of jail for something his like, Bruce Greenwood's own stupid-ass daughter decided was a good idea. And it's like, really, like, that's when you push the drama to a point that there's no fucking logic to it and things just happen because that's more dramatic, quote unquote. It's like, that's great if you get all of your notions of drama from the fucking CW.
Did anything actual entertaining outside of satirizing this film happen in it? Because I'm having trouble thinking of anything that really stood out.
The black kid had a couple funny lines.
That's what I was about to say. David's friend. Racist.
Oh my God.
This movie is bringing out the worst in us.
Well, no, it's literally, that's all the... Yeah. That is all the development we get of this character. He's the black friend.
Dayo Okuniyi, who has actually got a lot, who's a Nigerian actor and actually has a lot of chemistry.
Oh, The Hunger Games. I remember him.
Yeah, he has a lot of, I think, pretty funny lines. They were brief reprieves.
He is there. I mean, he might as well have been named Token.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, he's the black character in here. I mean, even he's not even dating, like, a black girl.
Yeah.
That's how Token is like, well, we got a black guy. That's all right. That's enough.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, shit just keeps happening. It's like this movie was written by a couple of 50-year-olds who were like, I'm pretty sure I know how kids are now, which is why we get scenes at the party like, hey, everyone take a song out of the hat and you have 30 minutes to choreograph a dance to it and then perform it. I'm like, who the fuck does that?
Like I said, the party they threw was like... like, even if this was, like, a party, like, with an American Idol theme or something, people would be, this is lame. What the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, these are supposed to be, like, a high school graduation party, and they're all drinking, presumably, fruit punch out of plastic cups. I don't know. What
did we do, Chris? What did we do to deserve to have to go to this movie?
I feel like this was this, you know, you'd think like in almost every way, except for the fact that these people have sex or like early on in the film together, they do in fact consummate. In every other way, though, this is made to show at like Christian lock-ins.
You know? That's why it sucks.
There's just like, who is this for? I don't know.
As somebody who went to a lot of Christian lock-ins as a kid, apart from the pizza rolls, there is nothing good about Christian lock-ins.
I think the funniest point to me at any point in this film, there's a point where, like, Alex Pettifer is chasing a car to try and catch it, and he's, like, doing the whole Tom Cruise run, going fast, and he's Robert Patrick's son. Robert Patrick plays his dad, who, of course, was Terminator in Terminator 2, so I had this image of him getting those metal hook arms and going, Kong, and like C-1000, the back of the car, and I laughed quite a bit.
That would have been... That was the thing, is this movie is more entertaining to just, like, laugh at the absurdity of it. Like, I almost want to recommend it as a movie that you just have to see in order to believe how terrible it is. By the way, this is an early front runner for me for worst film of this year.
It's going to be a long year ahead of us, but it's the thing about this is it's so utterly banal that it's hard for me to even... I can't imagine remembering anything that happens in this movie.
No, it's not just banal. It's not just banal. It is literally, like, one of the laziest scripts I have ever fucking seen. Like, oh, well, this is the part where there has to be a misunderstanding, or was, as I call it, the romantic MacGuffin between the two characters. And it's her walking in and seeing the guy sitting in a booth at a diner next to his ex-girlfriend, not kissing her, not with his arm around her, literally just she's sitting next to him. And her line is, well, that didn't take long. And I'm like... Are you Amish? What do you mean? For what? For them to sit next to each other?
To be fair, you were the one who was just acting like a bitch, so yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
It doesn't make any sense. And then the whole, like, literally, there's a point in this movie where the younger brother's like, I will never live up to my dad's, like, memory of my older brother, and he'll never let his death go. And I'm like, oh my God, you're a Family Guy joke. You're not even a real fucking plot device. Shut the fuck up.
I thought one thing that stood out to me as strange and kind of creepy is that Jade Butterfield, his mother is a writer and I guess has connections at, I forget which university
Georgia.
Nearby Georgia. That's right.
Played by Jolie Richardson.
Yes, Jolie Richardson.
Seen in lots of movies in the past, like Event Horizon, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, 101 Dalmatians, The Patriot, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm. And so she wants to help David because she is as charmed by his dreamy eyes as her daughter. And the recommendation to college for this boy is about how he has awakened something in her daughter.
So creepy!
He has brought a desire upon her and her entire family, and that she continues to be inspired by it. I was just waiting for it to be blank so that you could fill in my dick.
Yeah.
And then later in the movie, spoiler, he doesn't get into the college. We find out because the letter wasn't sent, but I was like, because they got the letter and read it,
yeah.
And you're sexually harassing a high school student.
It's funny because it's like, is this a recommendation letter or one of the lost chapters from 50 Shades of Grey?
Like, what
the
fuck is this? Really point,
was like, is this a remake of Endless Love or Taboo?
Yeah.
Well, and even her husband is like, are you in love with them too? And I was like, good question.
I was going to say, if he had played his cards right, could have totally hooked up a mother-daughter three-way. I'm just going to say.
I would have been all for that, actually.
It would have been the only thing that yeah. made this movie fucking interesting. That's the thing, is they make every...
Literally.
Yeah. They make every like preconceived, ready-made, bullshit romantic drama choice that you could possibly make. There is nothing unique about this movie. There's nothing bold about this movie.
And it has Alex Pettifer, so there
And
you
it
know.
Has Alex Pettifer.
Just, you know, that's just the... You don't really. We could have just said this movie has Alex Pettifer in the lead. So
oh, but the other thing we didn't mention about the mom is that she is a published author who is like, well, I was going to write again, but then I got married, and I don't know. Like, it was just like, oh my God, you're making female authors look the worst.
Yeah.
Right now.
Also, now your kids are grown.
Yeah. It's
so
like,
just say you have writer's block. Don't blame it on being a lady.
Yeah. Just write.
I have a vagina, yeah. So we're lucky. I even got one book out.
Right?
Let's face it. What? You know, sadly, I actually like the actor they have playing the brother, Reese Wakefield, who mm-hmm. has a unique energy and appearance, and I think he brings.
He looks like a sleaze stack.
He's got an odd appearance, but there's something about him that's just likable. He's, you know, and here he really shows up. I mean, like, he was the lead villain in The Purge. And I was always like, man, the movie's just okay, but I really like him.
Yeah, yeah, like if somebody had to bash my head in.
Yeah, he's the guy you'd want to do.
I kept waiting for him to mercy kill me so I'd have to sit through the rest of this fucking god-awful movie.
It's just, it's so boring. It's so pointless. It doesn't go anywhere you don't expect it to go, except that it goes so obviously where you'd expect it to go. You can't believe this movie's being
made
right now.
It's so prefabricated that it's insulting. It's like, do you really think that our time is worth this little? That this is the shit you trot out?
It's the movie version of the house they live in Arrested Development.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. It absolutely is. It's a Bluth home. It's a Bluth home.
But final thoughts on this. Ashley?
Yeah, I guess my concern is that I think a small piece of me died in that theater and is now haunting it Ju-on style.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, and I can't get that piece back. And other people might be trying to watch good movies, and I'm horrifying them.
That's almost too cool for this movie.
I'm doing my best, you guys. I really am. No, I'm there were some moments in it. I thought David's friend had some good lines. I think preteen girls who shop at malls, I don't know, might enjoy it. It's just, yeah, beyond Hallmark card, I think it's kind of a tough sell. And just when I thought they couldn't go any sappier, wow, they really shocked me there at the end. They really they really got sappier. So I think I'm going to give this 1 out of 5 friendship bracelets.
That's good.
Yeah. 1.5. That's 1.5.
1.5?
1.5 out of 5 friendship bracelets.
Brian?
I don't know what else I can say about a movie that has already taken up more of our review time than it possibly deserves, but I'm going to try with a series of jokes. I liked Bruce Greenwood better when he died in Star Trek. Kept hoping the kid from The Purge would murder everyone. This is the kind of movie that should only be shown at midnight on the CW. Haven't seen this many skeletal half-human characters since the last time I watched Army of Darkness, and there was so much sap they should mine it for mosquitoes with dino blood. This movie gets 1 out of 10. Yeah, this movie gets 1 out of 10 of the coconut-filled chocolates in the box, which are the absolute worst.
Yep.
Oh, that is the worst. I can't stand those things.
Go fuck yourself,
and
Endless
I
Love.
I can't stand this movie either. My God. This is like, of all the stuff that they screened three movies at the same night, and we had to end up with the short stick. You didn't have to end up with the short stick.
I know. I drove to the wrong theater. That was God punishing me.
Right?
This movie is like a black hole of entertainment. Just it, nothing, nothing good escapes, and it just pulls you in.
It's just harder and harder. I would rather watch any of the Twilight films again than this movie. Because at least people occasionally look like they might die.
I would rather watch the Spanish dub version of Tristan and Isolde.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something.
I would rather watch the Family Stone backwards.
But I found the performances dull beyond belief, with the exception of, like I said, Reese Wakefield, the brother, who doesn't have hardly anything to do, so it's barely worth mentioning. And the black friend, Deo Okuniyi, as Mace, who looks like he is wondering what the fuck he was even doing in this fucking movie, because he's obviously better than the material.
He also drove to the wrong set. I went to the wrong theater, he went to the wrong set.
I just wish they would stop casting Alex Pettifer as the lead in things. He's such a horrible, horrible actor. It's just, there's no way to feel any sort of sympathy for these people unless you're just young enough that you just haven't seen many movies.
This movie will delight the hell out of lovesick morons.
And I'm going to give this 0 out of 10 reasons to keep on living.
As we wrap up this Russian roulette of rom-droms that has been the week of Valentine's Day releases.
My God, it's been hard. But I'm glad it's over. Soon coming up, the much more fun St. Patrick's Day slew of movies.
Oh, faith in Begara! It's got to be better than this piece of crap.
I'll grab the beer bong.
Drinking buddies, too.
I would rather stick a hot Blarney Stone in my own colon than watch this movie again.
That can be arranged. Thank you very much for suffering through our Valentine's Day spectacular!
I'm just drowning my sorrows in jelly beans right now. Do they make Peeps for Valentine's Day? I want to eat a truckload of Peeps and just murder myself with empty calories.
I'm pretty sure that would, in fact, do the deed.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be back with more regular reviews next week. Thank God for that, because I can only take so much love in any given week. And this was, in fact, well above my love threshold.
It's making me hate people I already love.
Yeah. I don't know. It's wrong. It's sick and wrong. I apologize to all of you if you saw, well, at least Endless Love before. you know that's the one you got sucked into, and I'm sorry. Maybe you should start dating older, more mature women, is all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was over here tearing up Hallmark cards. What were you saying?
Anyway, thank you for joining us.
We're really sorry.